Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
This morning with Rod Oram. Morena, Rod, how are you?
Morena, Rachel, very well, thank you.
It is great to have you on the show. We've got two very butty topics to talk about today, child poverty and 10 years of the Christchurch earthquake. So let's start with the earthquakes, because 10 years is a long time, and it's been an interesting week, I think personally, as someone from Christchurch, reflecting on what's changed and what maybe hasn't changed. But politically, it's also a very interesting time to look back on what has been going on since the earthquake happened. In February 10 years ago. What are some of your biggest takeaways from this anniversary? What stuck out to you, Rod?
First of all, that Christchurch has achieved a great deal in the last 10 years, and the rebuild of the city, whilst there's still some more to do, has progressed well and delivered, in many ways, a very attractive city. I think also Christchurch, by the nature of it, has changed. I think that people work together in ways that they didn't before. Mm. So the city isn't quite so fragmented socially in some respects. And also some more adventurous people have come to Christchurch. Mm. Possibly some more people who were, and I quite understand this, were finding it all too stressful, have left. So I think there's a spirit there in Christchurch that wasn't there before. However, the big point I want to make is then one that applies to all of our big tasks. And I'm reluctant to say this about Christchurch because of all the hard work that's gone into it. But in many ways, what's being built there is not a 21st century city, but a fairly up-to-date evocation of the late 20th century city in terms of the city's structure and how it works and building materials and all the rest. So that's fine, but there was a bigger ambition that many people in Christchurch had, mm-hmm. which got squelched by the government. In particular, I'm sorry to pick on an individual, but he did lead that work, Jerry Brownlee, and then the government structures that were put in place to push through the anchor projects, for example. I mean, precincts don't rely in natural good cities on having, you know, very big anchor projects like convention centres, mm-hmm. or sports facilities. Cities are far more organic than that.
Yes.
So that's the thing for me, is it is a lovely place. It is better than it was. But for those people who had an ambition to create a really amazing 21st century city, they're going to have to do some more transformation to make that happen.
One of the things that has been discussed a lot in the 10 years since the big one is that there has been a very perhaps inequitable way in which the rebuild has happened, and I mean rebuild in the non-literal sense as well. So the reinstating of community, of settling insurance claims, of all the things that come with putting a city together again after something like a natural disaster, particularly with the eastern suburbs, which are usually lower socioeconomic, more Pacifica communities and more Māori communities, those are the suburbs that are still seeing some of the more significant impacts of the earthquake today as well. What do you think could have been done better, and what should be happening now as well to perhaps make that a more equitable process of re-establishing the city?
Yes, that part of the city was very much left behind and neglected, and the people there. However, the opportunity is still there, because the a corridor along the river, the plans are still being made for what could happen there. And I think something very, very special could happen there. But it's got to be development that works in a very natural way with the very low-lying river and rising sea level. So mm-hmm. you couldn't go back to any kind of dense housing there. There has to be much more of a mix. So, for example, more recreational space, more food production and places and things like that. But there'll still be plenty of room for communities and houses and others and other aspects of a good city to develop there. So I think that that's now the most important part of Christchurch in terms of how that's been developed. And I think that all the hardship that was suffered there and by the communities there that have got the short end of the straw in this first 10 years. That's where I think Christchurch can really demonstrate something really spectacular, both from a community and a people and a sort of a built and natural environment point of view.
One of the things that's also been criticised about the national government's handling of the earthquake at the time was the introduction of CERA as a board to sort of centrally govern the sort of fallout from the earthquake. And not that that was necessarily in and of itself a problem, but perhaps the handover from CERA and back into local government has been something that's been quite controversial and perhaps not handled the best that it could have been. What's your thoughts around the way that local government has been able to re-establish itself or even in fact be involved from the beginning with the earthquake process?
Yeah, first of all, it was far too marginalised by central government in the first sort of say 5 or 6 years, and rather hobbled in the resources that it had to be able to fully take over that role thereafter. So that goes right to the heart of the problem, which is that we're still trying to work out much better ways to tackle big issues, very complex interdependent issues here in New Zealand, and do it in very practical ways on the ground, in the community, and government playing a role in that as a partner, as a resource, but not dominating it, as it did in the Christchurch rebuild.
Mm.
So that's actually a very different kind of democracy. You know, we talk loosely about democracy 2.0 and all the elements of that. I'll come back to citizens' assemblies and citizen policy juries in a moment. That's I think, a very big lesson from that. Our democracy was inadequate there, as was our governmental systems. And so central government dominated. In the first half, if you like, of this past decade, and then rather hobbled local ability to do things in the second half.
Now let's talk a bit about this child poverty report that was released by Statistics New Zealand just a day or so ago. And it's been in some ways encouraging. We're seeing some decreases in material hardship, which is a positive thing, but we are still seeing worse outcomes for Māori and Pacifica children. We're also seeing that this report doesn't cover the COVID period as well. So this is a sort of pre-COVID report. So that leaves a few questions open there. And there has always been the push that the government needs to do more to perhaps meet its goals that it established two election cycles ago now. What are your thoughts on this particular report and what it means for us?
I think there are some good and positive lessons learned from the ability to reduce material hardship. But the fact remains there's somewhere around about 168,000 children who are still in the severest income poverty, which is below the 40th percentile for poverty line, 40% poverty line. So we're now then talking about deeply, deeply structural things with the economy in terms of very low wages and very insecure jobs and very poor housing. And that's where we get back to much more fundamental changes in our society and in our economy than a child poverty eradication reduction program like this can ever achieve. So that comes back to that sort of the same point I'm making about Christchurch, is about us as a society to be able to tackle those deeply, deeply systemic issues. That's what we're going to have to learn to do better, because there's no way we're going to reduce child poverty very significantly without learning those very different ways of doing democracy and politics, but crucially economics as well.
Mm.
Now, wonderfully, because of COVID, on one hand, we're seeing what happens when more help is available, and it's going to be really fascinating to see how child poverty tracked during the COVID period and the pandemic period. We absolutely need to be thinking about guaranteed minimum incomes and there's really, really interesting work going on overseas about new forms of wealth taxes to make it possible for societies to reinvent themselves and support people who need to be supported. So because of the pandemic, I think there's a lot of new thinking and new opportunities being opened up to take those sorts of very bold steps rather than doing more in a very incremental way with pretty conventional policy tools that have been around for a long time.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Rod Oram. It's always an absolute pleasure. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Rachel. See you.
See you later. Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with